It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast, our Pirate football playback. And joining me now, my two partners in crime, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. Kyle, what's up, man?
What's going on, dude? It's a Sunday morning here after a should-have-been Carolina victory.
That's right. We'll be talking about that and my other great quarterback partner in crime, Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, man?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Obviously very frustrating that we were unable to pull it off, but a lot of good things could be taken away from last night's ball game for sure.
Yes, the fact that the three of us, the three amigos, if you will, the three musketeers, and I have to say I'm going to throw some stuff out at you guys so we'll have an interesting podcast. Different, not angry. I think that it was anger for the first loss. Pirates are now, let's break it down. They lost 20-13. What a great defensive performance. Thank God for David Blackwell. I think he is the new hero in town, so to speak. And definitely he may be the new kid in town, but not when it comes to defense. And tremendous, tremendous job that he and the staff, the defensive staff have done. Now, players are playing hard for him. They believe in him. You can tell that he knows not only what he's doing, but the fact that the players love him. I've said that a lot, but they love him, and that's why you're seeing not only they love his style, his schemes, but they know that he knows what he's doing, and they'll do anything for him. So great there. Guys, I want to throw out to you several things I saw, observations. We'll just break it down. First and foremost, it looks like the question that was on Hoist the Colors last week that Steve Igo had, it looks like the red shirt is going to be burned for Holton Ahlers. I want to get your thoughts on that first.
Well, I mean, I don't guess we're quite sure just yet. I guess at this point, the idea would be play him through four games, the next two, Old Dominion Temple. And if it's successful, then you burn the red shirt. And if it starts looking like it did in the second half against USF where it isn't as successful, then you, maybe red shirt him. But we still got two more games we can play him in. My guess is most likely the redshirt is going to be burnt. What we need to do with Holton, if we're going to keep playing him, we need to come up with a more diverse running package for him. We're using about two different plays there. And, we also need to work on him with the passing game more. That's going to quit working, running the same two running plays over and over. Eventually, it's going to stop working.
I think it already did.
Well, some people are going to have a defense that is as good as South Florida. But we need to expand his playbook quite a bit. And I don't know. We also need to make sure Reed is comfortable with what's going on with Holton. Reed has got to progress a lot. He's got to start making better reads. And, also, we'll get into this in a little bit. They could help him out with the play calling a little bit. When you're asking a quarterback to throw 50-50 balls up over and over and over and over again on basically fly routes, I mean, that's not really an offense. That's hoping you're going to catch a ball.
Yeah. And Bob, I want to bring you in because one of the things that I wanted to say, and you're a quarterback, and fairness to all three quarterbacks that we have in the stable, so to speak, and that are in the quarterback room, the key to them, I think all three have talent. They may be different as far as their skill sets, but the one word that's the elephant in the room comes down to experience and game time experience, and that's fair to all three of them. I don't think you – Kyle said it last night. Kyle, I'll give you credit. I was thinking it. You said it. That's what people say that they love about you. We're thinking it. He says it. You said it last night. Give this guy a break with Reed Herring. It's only the third game the dude has ever started. And the same thing with Holton Ahlers. All these people that are local Greenville people that and I know how they feel. I'm excited about that. He's our future. I'm excited about Holton Ahlers. I love his dad, Morgan. I'm not anti him. In fact, I'm taking up for him. The dude is only a true freshman, and you guys act like that he's going to turn the program around and that everything is going to be great. You got to give the kid a chance to This level is huge. It's a huge difference between high school and college. Everybody will tell you that, right, Bubba? I mean, I want to get your thoughts on that. I want to throw that out to you.
Yeah, it's definitely a huge jump for Holton to make. And Holton, I think, with what he brings to the run game, I know you posed a question earlier and Kyle responded, but I definitely think the red shirt will be burnt. We have a couple more games that we can play him in and then have to make that decision. But I just think with what he brings to the ground attack, I think he had 48 yards last night. And then it's not only that, but a lot of the good carries that Hal or Scott, et cetera, would have were when Holton's at quarterback because there's that threat of him keeping the ball. So when you look at that, and we ran for 156 yards as a team last night on 46 carries, so a little less than 3.5 per. So I just think we have to play Holton at this point because we haven't proven that we can run the ball very well without him in there. But as far as the three quarterbacks go, obviously none of the three of us are at practice and we don't know what's going on there. I'd say Herring and Ehlers are in the roles they're in for a reason. I mean, and Reed, of course, didn't have his best outing for sure last night. It was the worst of the three. And it's his first road game. It's the guy's third start ever. So fans need to be reasonable, and nobody likes it any less than him, that's for sure. And Reed has shown plenty of good things, and I think he'll end up being a solid quarterback for us.
What do you how long, Bubba, do you think? Let's just play devil's advocate and say Reed isn't progressing by after the Temple game. Do you think at that point, and I hope that's not the case because I think Reed does have a big upside, but let's say he's not progressing after the Temple game, and again, I think part of that could be play calling. At what point do you say, all right, what we can do is run the ball, particularly when Ehlers is in? At what point do you expand Ehlers' role if Reed doesn't progress, concentrate more on the zone read and the running game? Because, I mean, hell, Ehlers can throw up 50-50 balls. Anybody can do that.
Yeah, I was going to say some of that will depend on how much we can expand Holton's package as far as him being able to put it in the air some. And I know what he threw a deep ball last night that was well overthrown. I think they had tight coverage anyway, so no harm that it was well overthrown, other than Trayvon not having a chance to make a play on the football. But whether it's sprinting him out some or some RPOs, hopefully we can continue to expand his package where there's more guesswork that's involved with the defense when Holton's in the game. And I think that will certainly play a role. And then Reed Herring, I mean, overall, I think he's done pretty well, guys. I know there were a few times last night when he was making throws on the outside where his stride was more as though he was throwing a ball in the middle of the field or like slightly to one side, not outside the numbers. So, and I'm referring to the game's final offensive play for us where the interception.
That was terrible for us.
On the back shoulder throw of probably 20 to 25 yards. So yeah, just some mechanical things like that. You always hear people that know anything about coaching quarterbacks, you hear them talk about coaching them from the ground up, and they're obviously just referring to the footwork. And if the footwork's bad, then the other mechanics are going to go downhill as well.
And I was going to mention, too, guys, I mentioned that at the top on purpose on experience, but Reed Herring is a really good – I think he's a good quarterback. I think Ehlers is quarterback. We're not sure about Effetti. That's a whole other subject later on we'll talk about. But when it comes to the two quarterbacks that have played the most, I think they bring different skill sets, but they're still good quarterbacks. I think that what we did was, again, when I talk about the program as a whole, when I'm talking about athletics program, we've gambled a lot. We gambled on a JUCO, and we gambled on a grad transfers, and it didn't work. And so now what we're left with is this is the homegrown talent. When you have Reed Herring, who's from Raleigh, You have a guy from Charlotte and Kingsley Effetti, and you have a guy when you talk about home, I mean, hometown Greenville, North Carolina for Holton Ahlers. There are three good quarterbacks there, and I think the key is we've got, as fans, we're impatient because it's year three of Montgomery, and the problem we have is they didn't give the experience. They didn't set Reed Herring up to win at all, especially early on now. I think if he had, if they had given him more experience last year, knowing that Thomas Cirk was a grad transfer and hurt really bad, and, I mean, my God, they put all their eggs in one basket with when everybody says we need to have one quarterback and just start one quarterback, well, there's your problem right there. They put everything on Gardner Minshew, and he leaves us for a family emergency that's not in Mississippi, but apparently in the state of Washington. So I don't. I think it's a terrible idea, especially with this day and age of quarterback. Look at Alabama; they're playing two quarterbacks. So I think it's terrible to just say if you have two, means you don't have one. I think that in our particular case, the problem we have is we don't have guys with experience. They have a lot of raw talent, and they've just got to have patience. We got to have patience that we don't have because it's year three of Montgomery.
And yeah, I agree with you. And I think a lot of the lack of patience, I do think, and we hadn't touched on this much, but I think some of that, some of the play calling last night was atrocious.
Yes.
I think if, when we got down by 7 points, we panicked.
Yep.
You would have thought we were down by 21 points. All of a sudden, every damn play is a deep route, 25 yards, 30 yards downfield, instead of going underneath, running the ball, you know, working in the middle of the field. I don't understand why we panicked that way. It's ridiculous. The coaches panicked. So that goes back on the play call, and if you're not going to be successful, you're not setting your quarterback up for success, asking him to throw 50-50 balls to the outside 20 times a game. You're just not going to work very well. I do think a lot of the quarterback woes and the fan frustration should go maybe towards Tony Peterson and less on Reed. And I think another thing is because of Holton being Holton Ahlers, being Morgan's son, being a high school legend in Greenville, being you know, a pirate through and through, I think people immediately, or as soon as any sign of Reed struggling, are like, okay, put it Holton. And, yeah, Holton's a great athlete. He's a hell of an athlete. Holton's upside is enormous. But we need to be patient with Reed. And, look, if we can't get anything going in the passing game in a couple more games with Reed, then I think that you have to put in Holton because at least he gives us the chance to run the ball. What was another thing I was wondering, Bubba, what do you think? Is Reed just too scrawny, for lack of a better term, to run any zone reads and that kind of stuff with him? He's fast. Do you think he's just too prone to getting injured if we mix in any run game with him?
I was going to say, if you recall, I think there was a time in the second half, or in the second quarter, yeah. I remembered we were driving the same direction that we were in the fourth quarter when we ran the play where Reed pulled it and kept it and lost about 5 yards. And that's certainly not to say that he can't do it, but I just don't think that's as much his skill set and as it is
right.
Holton's. But
well,
like,
yeah.
you were, and I'm not, I know you weren't saying that it was, but I know you think back to the North Carolina game we ran a speed option with Herring and Husan Howell, and I think it was a play where Howell reverse field and ended up getting about 30 yards. But anyway, to answer your question, I don't think Reed Herring can do that on a consistent basis necessarily the way Holton does. But something else, just before we move on, because I know we have a lot to talk about, but as far as this goes, with I think you're seeing both guys now for a reason. I mean, that's no great revelation, but just, I mean, Reed's obviously the better passer, and then Holton allows us to run the ball more effectively. And I think if Holton was more serviceable in the passing game right now, then he'd be your starting quarterback.
Yeah.
Well, I think you got a situation where it's the ultimate thing, a good problem to have. And I, again, going back to when people said the old adage, if you have two, you don't have one, I think that's an outdated term. I think that, Bubba, I think you referenced this too, and I was thinking about it when people were talking about it's a situation of Chris Leak and Tim Tebow of Florida when they had two quarterbacks. I think that we could, if it comes down to it and the red shirt is going to be burned, I'm okay with that. I'm not saying, you know, I'm not okay with the red shirt being burned, but I think if that's the case, then what's got to happen now is you've got to make, I think what you were alluding to or talking about, Kyle, with, in other words, what I'm trying to say is you've got to make more, both of those more than one-dimensional. In other words, Reed, you need to make him where you've got some draw plays set up or some kind of where he's got – I've noticed one thing, and I want to say this, and it's not critical. Maybe he's nervous, but I think Holton is more used to, obviously, the offense of his own Reed, and obviously he – people respect the fact he's ability to run, so – Reed, I've noticed there's been times when he does a terrible fake, and then it's like they know, okay, this is definitely a running play, you know, with Howell coming in. This is, you know, going to be a run play. There's no way that he's going to, in other words, he's not going to be running the ball. It's going to be Howell or whoever, the Penix or whoever, or Scott. And the same thing with Holton. Oh, he's going to be running. He's not going to pass the ball. So I think that having the two quarterbacks is great, but I'm hoping the coaching staff will – coach them up and work with them on designing more plays and then working where, for example, when you were talking about the 50-50 balls, Kyle, I was thinking that that very thing of instead of 50-50 balls, why not have some more running plays in there? And also when there's nothing there, if they say, hey, you're looking and you see your reads and there's nothing there, then see if you can run with the ball for a few yards or make something happen, you know. And I know that's a lot to ask Reed Herring being brand new.
Well, there was times where there was stuff there if he would have made his reads. And, I mean, that comes through experience. But there was times where he threw it to the wrong receiver where other people were just completely wide open. But I get what you're saying. Yeah, if it's not there, pull it down and run it.
Yeah. And then going back to – I'm trying to really be fair to everything, but you've got – in one respect, as a coach, you know, Bubba and Kyle, you say it's not fair to open up the playbook and then people are going to be turning on these kids because they're so they're not new to football, but this level, you know, the experience is what they need. So if we open up the playbook and then they're doing all this stuff that they're not really ready for, then you have that problem. On the flip side is with Holton is that he's very talented. But if you just have a couple plays for him, then everybody's go, okay, you see Holton, he's going to be doing this. You know, these one or two plays, we know what's coming. And the same thing with Reed. He's going to be, we're going to throw these routes out of the sideline. And number 88, he's going to be looking at 88. So be ready to, you know, that's all you have to do is just concentrate on the Trayvon Brown. So, you know, I know there's people say, well, you can't blame coaching because they've got to make the plays and they have to make the reads. But you also have to mix up the play calling because if you keep doing those routes where you're throwing up the ball 50-50 balls and Trayvon's got to come down with it, that's also not fair to Trayvon. I hear people say, well, they should make that catch. Some of those, yes, but that's why they're called 50-50 balls. They're not called 100% balls, right? I mean,
well, you know, when Riley was here, he would put his best receiver in the middle of the field and let him get the ball. You know, we throw to like Justin Hardy, for example.
Right.
We'd give him a 10-yard pass and it middle of the field would be open. Other receivers would be blocking for him and he'd make a big play. What Montgomery's doing by putting his best receivers on the outside, it's kind of more of that NFL philosophy of putting your best player against their best DB and go one-on-one 50-50 balls. I always like the thought process of creating a mismatch where, you know, even if it gives them the advantage on the outside, if you put your best receiver on a safety, or I mean, you're going to create a mismatch there. So.
Yeah, I mean, when well, Bubba, help us out because we're trying to be fair here, but those a lot of those throws are asking Reed to make. And I was thinking this, so guys, help me out on this. I know that y'all don't love pro as much as I do, but some of those throws they're asking Reed to make would be difficult even for an NFL quarterback or maybe one of the best, Aaron Rodgers. Some of those throws they're asking him to make. I know that they're throws that he has to get better on. I'm not saying that, but I'm also saying, to be fair to Reed, they're putting him in a difficult position because of A, that he needs experience, but B, also he needs, in other words, get him in a rhythm. I thought Lincoln Riley was good on getting Shane Carden in a rhythm. He'd give him little passes and he would, you know, do different things. And then, but it seems like we're going to the well too many times. Trayvon Brown, 50-50 ball, Trayvon Brown, 50-50 ball. Some of that's on Reed, yes, because he needs to make the reads, but also Tony Peterson needs to do a better job, I think, of mixing up the play calling. Don't abandon the run, because if you do, then they know, oh, he's going to go to 88.
Yeah, I'm going to say last night, the cornerback for USF, that's what Mike Hampton, that's what he had, four pass breakups, and he was doing a tremendous job on Trayvon all night long. And like you said, obviously you got to get the ball in Trayvon's hands, but at the same time, you can use that to your advantage to get other people involved and find different ways to get the ball in Trayvon's hands besides just those 50-50 balls we've talked about. But Trayvon. Yeah, and Trayvon had the one early in the game that set up our first touchdown, our only touchdown. It went for 47 yards, I think it was. And then Trayvon finished with six grabs for 99 yards last night. And then so that meant he had five for 52. And then he had the one on our next to last possession where he took it away from Hampton, I guess it was, or whoever was defending him on that play. But yeah, they did a good job of shutting Trayvon down for the most part. And go ahead.
Hey, Bubba, if what we're going to do is just throw up those fly routes to the outside and throw up the 50-50 ball, it seems like we're saying that too much, by the way. If what we're going to do is do that, isn't that going to be most successful coming off of a play action of some kind from the run game where the corners are biting down? And if that's all we're going to damn throw, wouldn't it almost be more effective to have Holton doing that? That way we have the run threat in there and maybe the corners will be biting down some on the run.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can throw the ball off play action, I mean, that's definitely the best way to throw the football. For sure. And like you've alluded to, and something I was talking with another former player this morning, and he observed just the way we don't have much separation. So Reed, he's having to make very, very accurate throws for the most part. Now, I mean, I know there's some where there's been more, but as a general rule, we've had to be more accurate with it than probably some quarterbacks we've had in the past have had to have been. Where Justin Hardy, Zay Jones, whoever have had greater separation, but we have some
speed at receiver. Why aren't we getting separation?
But that's what I was just getting to. Maybe we need to. I'm going to go back and look at it and some of the route combinations and stuff. I'm certainly not saying that is the case, but
maybe
it could very well. Maybe what route combinations are we running, or are we doing things that could, you know, get these guys open? And
I think our route running and I think the routes we choose to run are garbage. We're not very creative. There is no creativity in that passing game. I think that's a huge issue. I don't know. I don't know at this point what you do about that. You know what I mean? Other than I don't see us creating a whole bunch of new routes here mid-season, well, not mid-season, but in the middle of the season. So I don't know what you do about that at this point.
I'll say one thing before we move on, because I think we definitely need to move on as far as a lot of other things to touch on last night's game. But as far as Holton goes, and I'm sure Coach Moe's obviously done this a long time, as has Tony Peterson and the rest of our offensive staff, but it'll be interesting to see if we put in some sprint out passes for Holton, where that and some half rolls to maybe simplify his reads and get him more involved in the passing game, and then also make him a run threat, because with him being a run threat and sprinting him out, if he'll have different levels or reading one or two guys as opposed to more. So if that second or third option isn't there, then the third or fourth option is for him to pull it down and go with it.
I had a question for both of you, because you know I'm a big fan of all three of the quarterbacks, and I want to see if Eddie gets touches. Why not, you know, see them trying to do reverses and different, which I was happy that they're trying last night. I wanted to ask you guys, I thought about why not put Kingsley in there and set him up, because people aren't expecting him to be there, and do like a halfback option. I mean, you know, why not, where you have a chance he can run the ball, or he can throw maybe a short pass or something to get him going, or at least get him in there occasionally in there to see what he could do. And not saying to have three quarterbacks, but, you know, we need to get him on special teams and different parts of the game.
Well, I think if you see him come in at halfback, people are going to immediately know what's coming.
Double pass or whatever.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know if he has any ability to play receiver. He's fast. If he's willing to do that, you can mix him in on receiver some, and then you have a chance to run a trick play with him at receiver, taking a direct snap or pitching it to him and then have him throwing it, like we used to do with Justin Hardy a little bit.
Yeah.
So, okay. I'm going to change your name to David Spurrier Richmond.
Yeah, I'm going to say we.
I just, my concern is that we need to be deep at quarterback, and if we're just going to stick to two quarterbacks, my worry is
just two quarterbacks.
Yeah,
I'm talking about what I'm saying is, in other words, in the film room. I mean, you know, right now,
right.
If football, let me say this: if football were not a injury prone kind of sport, then I would not feel it. I'm nervous because if we had, for example, if you have somebody like a Shane Carden who's been in there, then I'm not even in the mindset that I'm in right now. What I'm saying is I'm worried because we're in year three, so we have coaches that are like, we've got to win ball games or we're going to be fired, and they're putting Reed Herring out there, which obviously he won the job, and you obviously want Holton to come in there because, yes, it's great he's getting experience, but it comes back to, yes, they need experience, but also we're expecting him to do a lot. And then is it going to be their fault down the line? I'm just worried. There's a few things I'm worried about when it comes to the quarterback position, because that's been the elephant in the room for the last few years since 2015 is experience. And then back in 2015, we just didn't have the level of the Division I level quarterback.
I'm just not sure how playing a third quarterback is going to help anything. I mean, you got to get him reps at practice. That needs to, he's got to be feel like he's a part of it. And if he wants to find his way on the field at receiver, then tremendous. But I'm just not sure how playing a third quarterback is going to help anything, unless you know, if Reed gets hurt or Holton gets hurt, then if Eddie will have his chance. I don't see, you know. I don't see how we play. I don't see how playing a third quarterback would have helped us win the game last night.
No, from a coach's perspective, I mean, like you said in practice time, Kyle. I mean, we're talking about getting these guys experience. I mean,
yes.
But And you have Reed Herring, who just started his third game, and Holt Nahlers, who's just played in the second game of his college career. So, I mean, no, they're not game reps, but they need all the practice reps they can get. And if,
exactly.
And if you're trying to prep a third guy to go in there, that means that they're getting less practice reps, and just it's not going to happen.
So basically what we have to do is go with the two we have and then pray that neither one of them gets hurt. And if they do,
well, that's what everybody does, David. I mean, that's what everybody does. You're not going to see Lincoln Riley rotating out the quarterback at Oklahoma. Guys, help me out.
Kyler Murray.
You're not going to see him rotating out Kyler Murray. And then if he did have a running quarterback, you're not going to see him go, well, now let's take Kyler Murray and the running quarterback out and let's put in our third string to get him some reps. I mean, maybe if you're up by, maybe if you're up by 40, but I mean, in a 13-13 ball game, had we pulled Holt Nahlers out and Reed Herring out and said, all right, let's put in the third string, let's play any. I mean, I would have killed somebody.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm just simply saying that I'm hoping that we can find a way, a role for him on the team. And he may only want quarterback, and that may be the case. I think that's what we've heard.
Oh, sure. If he's fast, I mean, put him in kickoff return, punt return, put him in at receiver. But I think maybe also there's the fear there that you're actually saying you're scared of. If you put Nfetti in at receiver and kickoff or punt return, there's a chance that he gets hurt. And then if you do need him, you don't have him. So, I mean, he's third string for a reason. You know, I say that, and look what Old Dominion's third string quarterback did yesterday.
Yeah.
But, I don't see how, unless he's willing to play another position and unless we're willing for him to play another position, I don't see how you get him on the field at this point unless Reed or Holton regress. Then if one of those two regress instead of getting better, then Ben and Fetty will get his opportunity. Otherwise, I don't see it. But, you know, I'll tell you what, maybe we should move on from quarterbacks if that's okay with you guys.
I was going to say, let's talk about your favorite position. Kyle, I love the running game last night up until, sometime in the fourth quarter.
Well, we were running the ball, and Bubba, you mentioned earlier that we obviously run it better when Holton's in there. But I thought there was some times, particularly on first down, that we ran it just fine with Reed in there. We were getting 4, 5, 6 yards on first down many, many times. Yeah. And when you pick up those kinds of yards on first down in the running game, that sets you up for success.
Right.
And I don't understand why we didn't have more success after we did that. I think I like Darius Penix. I think he's our best back. I think Scott is good. I think Haseen Howe's good. But I think Penix is our best back. And I know Scott's starting right now. Haseen Howe's, he's got burst. But I like playing all three of them. I really do. But there's something about watching Penix, man. I want to see him get lathered up. There's a time where I think you need to let a back stay in there and say, all right, we're going to feed you the ball and just see what happens. Because he's strong and he's a powerful runner, but he's got some speed too. And I don't know if you guys agree with that at all, but I like the rotating. But, man, Penix just seems like a guy you need to get lathered up.
Yeah, I was going to say, the guy's production last night, like you said, all three were used substantially. You had Darius Penix, who got the most carries and actually the least yards. It was 12 for 30 for Penix. And then you had
Lincoln but we Scott. Used him in short yardage situations a lot.
Right, right. And I wasn't saying that as though Penix wasn't effective.
Right.
But Anthony Scott, 11 for 39. Husson Howe, 7 for 40. And he had that tremendous run where he broke a tackle and then got 3 or 4 more yards, and I think it was about a 20-yard run. But Anthony Scott had one there, I think it was in the second half, where he about busted out of there and somebody got him by the ankle. And,
yes.
And because you thought it looked like it was going to go about 50.
Yep.
But, yeah, and then Holton had 12 for 48, And of course, the touchdown, he was our leading rusher. So there you see, it's very much a team effort. And I think the reason you're seeing all those guys is because they bring their different things to the table. Hassan Howe is certainly, he and Anthony Scott, but I think without going back and checking, I think Howe's probably got the best yards per carry.
Yeah, but Howell, I think he's a good change of pace back. I don't know that Howell would be a good every down back.
That's the thing. We have, with the skill positions, we have a lot of talent, and that's the one thing I don't think that – I think they bring, like you said, different things to the table. So when you have Anthony Scott in there or Howell in there, the two of them, they are fast as lightning. And I think Trace Christian is going to be that way when he gets I think he, being a freshman, he'll be a lot better. And then Penix, like you said, Kyle, that's old school football right there. Pound it right down your throat, and he brings a lot of that. Where he's so physical and so strong of a back, you definitely appreciate him very much. And overall, I'd much rather have those guys because, again, you put your if you say you okay, we're going to go with Hal or whoever or Scott. I think also I've noticed that it takes pressure off of Anthony Scott. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, man. Anthony Scott, you know, he's getting pushed right now. Knowing you have Hassan Howell and Derek Spindix behind you, it's going to make you a better back. It's going to make you hold on to the football because you know if you slip up and you fumble the ball or you're not giving 100%, that you got two backs behind you that can take playing time away from you. So, you know, Anthony Scott is worth his salt, so to speak. So, those guys pushing him is a good thing.
And I've been a huge fan. I picked him on he's my adoptive player on Hoist the Colors. So people that are Hoist the Colors subscribers, you get to pick a pirate every year. And I picked him because I want to see I liked him when he was a freshman. I thought he was one of the best running backs we've had in a while as far as talent. And I really want to see him go out on a strong note. So,
yeah,
good for him.
Good.
Looking good so far.
He's good, man. I'm a big fan of Derrick Fenix, but I do like Ant Scott too. And you know,
I like
Ant,
all of them.
Yeah, I do.
I like
Ant was a shoestring tackle away from breaking a big one last night. I challenged all three of the running backs. Right now, the passing game is struggling. We talked about it earlier. Some of it's due to quarterbacks. A lot of it's due with the play calling. But I challenge all three of the running backs. This week against ODU, come out and let's run it down their throats, guys.
Yeah.
I think all three of you can have a big game. If Anthony Scott, if Darius Fenix, or Howell listen to this podcast, or any of their friends or teammates listen to this podcast, tell them we're challenging them to just run it down ODU's throat this week.
I know that old school football, right? It's smash mouth running and really good defense, and we control the clock, time of possession, and that's going to be – we need to get used to that because that actually helps us for the tough October we have coming up, don't you think, guys, with everything, with injuries, with certainly keeping the game close. It takes pressure off the quarterback.
I'm not saying we can win the East Division. We're already 0-1 in the East, but I'll say Skip Holtz won a couple championships playing good defense and running the football.
Yeah,
when you're going to be facing the like of De'Aaron King and then also Mackenzie Milton, et cetera, and the explosive offenses you have with Houston, UCF, and Memphis.
And by the way, guys, I'm sorry, Bubba, I was just going to say that UCF, as I checked, in the coaches' poll is up to 14 now this week, up from 18 to 14.
Good for them and good for the conference. I didn't check the polls this week, guys. Is South Florida get ranked, or are they still sitting outside?
Yeah, they're not. I didn't see them in there. The coaches,
okay.
I haven't obviously the we're recording this on Sunday, so I didn't see the. I haven't seen the AP as of yet.
Gotcha. It'll be interesting to see. I don't know that anybody is. You know, I mean, nor should they after the way we played the last couple of years and the loss to A&T to start the season. They lost to freaking Morgan State yesterday. Nor should anybody give us any credit yet. So I think that loss to us only, or excuse me, I think beating us only by 7 probably ain't going to help them at all with the pollsters. But You know, it is what it is. If we want respect, then we're going to have to earn it. And playing close games, beating Carolina, playing South Florida close is a good start. But my point is, yesterday's performance probably didn't help South Florida very much to get ranked.
And, Bubba, I know that you had some defensive stats that I just wanted to talk about. And actually, it's good to have to be able to say the word defense and good news, right?
Yeah, definitely. I want to say, when you take a look at our defensive numbers from last night, they were certainly winning ones. And that goes without saying, not only did we only give up 20 points, which is the main thing, but then not only in last night, we weren't even of the bend, don't break variety. So we only allowed 295 yards of total offense, and then 185 of that came on three plays, of course. On the first scoring drive of USF's, they had about a 39-40-yard pass to Johnny Ford, the running back that we wanted, and we saw why with his explosiveness. But they hit him down the middle on a seam route, and then you had the screen and go on the next possession, and then you had the 80-yard run with 10 minutes left in the ball game. That was the deciding score, and that was 185 of their 295. And then on the ground, I just mentioned the 80-yard run. Even with that, they only ran for 120 yards. So we had totally stifled them in their running game until they hit the big one on us with Cronkite there with 10 minutes to go in the game. But you take a look at it, guys, I'm going to say they had 13 possessions, and that's not counting their final possession where they just ran out the clock. So it's technically 14, but really when you look at it, 13 possessions, 9 punts, a turnover. That's what I think it was, 8 three and outs. When was the last time we forced 8 three and outs? Just remarkable defensive numbers. We had 6 sacks. A lot of TFLs, I think 7 or 8 TFLs. So then you have, after I mentioned, we have a 3-and-out on the first possession of the game, then they had those 2 scoring drives, but then the defense after that just stood tall time and again. So we got 7 straight stops, 6 of which were punts. Then we forced a turnover on the first possession of the second half. And out of 10 possessions, 9 of those – none of those were stops. And to make it even more impressive, we, like I said, 8 of those 9 stops were 3 plays or less.
Yeah. What I've noticed most about Blackwell's defense, except for just the way they get upfield, the defensive line gets after that quarterback so friggin' hard and on the run blitzes, D-line just gets upfield so much, is he adjusts, man. During the UNC game and during the USF game, that he both, you know, both games there was a scoring drive given up early, and then that defense adjusted. He adjusts to what he sees. He's really good. He's the real, as Scotty Montgomery would say, David Blackwell, you are the real deal.
Yes, he is, and he actually. The good news is for the defense. That last year, if we started in March of the podcast, but last year if we were doing the podcast during the season, we would have spent a lot of time talking about, God, what do we have to do to, you know, improve the defense? Anything, right? Being dead last year, the only way you can go is up. But now it's ironic that we're spending so much time talking about, on this podcast alone, about the offense, and it's really good numbers to hear that, Bubba. Thank God for someone like myself who loves defense, that really makes me feel good. I think it's a pride thing, and my pride has been hurt a lot, not only as a whole for the football team, but certainly with the defense. So it's good to see that we're off to a good start. And this Saturday, we've got a big opponent with Old Dominion. We'll be talking about a little bit about sort of a sneak peek. We'll be doing that. But another thing that I know, Bubba, you wanted to talk about is the that comes to mind is special teams, right?
Yeah, and actually, Dave, before we move on to talk about special teams performance last night, let's take a couple more looks at things on the defensive side of the ball. A couple of individual things. Alex Turner, just what a game that Alex had last night, really controlling things on the interior, and that was from the get-go. He had a sack and a half last night, So he led us in that regard. He had five tackles. He blocked a PAT. Just did a tremendous job. He's been primarily known as a run stopper in the past, and now we're getting him more involved in the pass rush side of things. So that's good. Corey Sargent and Witherspoon, the JUCO transfer.
And filled in for Colby Gore, right?
Right, filling in for Colby Gore, who's still undergoing the concussion protocol and return to play process. Those guys, of course, USF, with the way we controlled the football, they only put it in the air 20 times last night, but they still had excellent coverage. And outside of that screen and go, really did a good job of blanketing some very talented USF receivers. And then the other thing I wanted to mention, guys, is the national defensive numbers. Tom McClellan put out a tweet today about 5 o'clock.
Oh, wow.
We retweeted that on the Sports OBJ account. But total defense, we're giving up 320 yards per game, which ranks 24th nationally. 24th nationally in total defense at 320 yards per game. Tackles for loss, TFLs. You have us ranking 10th nationally. Third down defense, 16th. Opponents are only converting 29%, 12 out of 42 thus far through three games. And then first down defense, a number you don't hear as much, but we're ranking third in first down defense. And then one final one I'll leave you with, and it's pretty mind-boggling. You recall the issues we've had getting pressure on the quarterback and much less sacking him the last two seasons. In 2016, Scotty's first year, we only had 8 sacks the entire season. Last year, we slightly improved that to 11. Well, last night, guys, we had 6.
Well,
yeah, that was incredible. And particularly being that, you know, one of the question marks on this football team was depth of the defensive end position. And, you know, he's doing it with, you know, not a lot to play with in terms of depth on that D-line. Goes to show again, man, coaching matters. David Blackwell knows what he's doing, and those boys have bought in. Credit the players. They've bought into what Coach Blackwell is preaching. And Coach Blackwell's the kind of coach, just watching him on the sideline, hearing him talk, he doesn't make you buy into him. He makes you believe in yourself. You know, some guys will do that whole buy in, they're not buying in crap. And it means they're not buying into the coach. Well, I'm not out there with Coach Blackwell, but he just strikes me as the kind of guy that's not about people buying into him. It's about them buying into themselves and believing in their ability. And that's what those boys are doing, I believe.
And boy, are they ever. I mean, to have the – you remember, guys, when I was talking about at 129, dead last year, if you could just get to total defense of 80, would be a huge improvement. And I know it's early on, so we have to temper everything about that we've got some big-time opponents coming up. But you have to say that – we'll take it for where we were. with the A&T loss, as bad as it was, it's still the fact that we
and that one on the defense.
Correct. And that's something we can talk about at length. We'll talk more about it in our preview. We've got to find I don't want to spend a lot of time, obviously, but we got to find a way to improve our offense. If we don't, then
we talked about that enough at the beginning of the podcast.
I know, but score more points. We got to score.
I think the answer this Saturday, I guess, ultimately, and maybe I'm wrong, Bubba, I'll see what you think, but as we alluded to earlier, I think the answer this Saturday is running down their damn throat. What do you think?
Yeah, I would say Virginia Tech certainly had a lot of success on the ground yesterday. They ran for, I think it was 318 yards. I was actually looking at that box score prior to us coming on the air, and that's what the Hokies had a lot of success on the ground, and with the way our ground attack seems to steadily be improving, even though last night the yards per carry wasn't exactly where we wanted it. I mean, if we rush for 156 yards, you feel pretty good about things. And then, so you'd like to think that this coming week that we have a very strong chance at topping 200. But
I'm challenging again, another challenge to the offense. Guys, are you listening? I want 300 yards rushing this week.
Right.
Okay. Kyle gets what he wants, too. You know, when, in fact, right. When we had 156 yards rushing, right, Bubba, last night?
Yeah, we had 46 carries for 156, and that was about 3.4 per carry. And then, of course, our leading rusher was Holton Ahlers. He had 12 for 48, and then, of course, the touchdown on the game's opening drive. And then you had Hassan Howe. He had, I think it was 7 for 40. Scott had 11 for 39. And then you had Darius Pennix, who was, of course, used more in the short yardage situation. So his yards per carry weren't quite as good, but he had 12 for 30.
And
guys, have we worked out special teams yet?
No, that's what I was getting ready to do next. We need to talk about special teams. I thought that one thing that comes to mind is I want to get your take on this, guys, because when I was watching the game last night, the concern I had, and just knowing a little bit of with the coaching I've done, watching the game for a long, long time, but I want you guys have the expert eyes. Is it me, or do you think that when we had that punt was pretty much blocked? Do you guys think that John Young is waiting too long? I mean, after a couple seconds, it needs to be punted away, don't you think? I mean, I know for the long snapper, it's usually what a long snapper you want to get about a second and a half or 2 seconds to the punter, Bubba.
Yeah, the snap itself is generally a little less. It's about 0.8 seconds or something. But, yeah, as far as your total operation time, as far as from the snap to the time the ball leaves the foot of the punter, I mean, it's going to be hopefully about 1.8, 1.9, but certainly no longer than 2. If you're getting up there 2 seconds or above, then you've got a pretty good chance of getting blocked. But last night I certainly – I don't know – who was more to blame, or if there was enough this blame to go around as far as
Verity.
Go ahead.
The one punt Verity punted, it looked great.
That was 60 some yards. I mean, it was a big time punt.
Yeah.
Something I really want to go back and look at as far as just seeing the whole operation and that kind of thing. But yeah, it was something, if I'm not mistaken, it seemed like you noticed it early on in the game. And I don't know if it was something that that they noticed maybe in warm-ups, or if it was on the first punt, or if maybe if it was even prior to that in film study, something they had noticed against UNC.
Yeah, that'd be my guess. Though we haven't punted it that much, but I bet you it is something that showed up on film. I think besides our field goal kicking has been great so far, but besides that, I mean, kickoff returns, punt returns, we're not granting enough yardage, and like I say, on kickoff returns, I wish we would take advantage of the new rule to fair catch the ball, and get it at the 25 instead of trying to run it and get it to the 17.
Kyle, yeah, tell everybody, for people listening that maybe they don't know the new rule, tell them what the new rule is.
The new rule, if you fair catch a kickoff, beyond the 25 yard or inside the 25, if you fair catch a kickoff inside the 25 yard line, you get it at the 25 now, as if you were fair catching it in the end zone or dealing it in the end zone, I should say. And we're not taking advantage of that. And, I get it. Maybe you want to create a play, a big play on kickoffs, but, I think there's a time for that. I think if you need to create some momentum in a game, you try to return that kickoff. But, I think more times than not, from what I've seen so far, we're better off just taking that fair catch and getting it at the 25 start drive.
That certainly needs to be addressed. I think overall the special teams is good. It's just some tweaks. And, of course, with having Kirk Dahl, I know that you and I, we've talked before, the three of us have talked before, but if that becomes we can't have that be an issue. Another thing, too, as we think about it, we have now that the defense is – this is why special teams is even more important for us now, is that now that the defense has improved where they're keeping us in games, we cannot have any kind of breakdowns on – you never can, but especially when you're fighting and you're trying really hard to win games, right?
Well, Steve Logan used to always say, you're going to win most of your football games if you win offensive special teams or defensive special teams. If you win one of those plus special teams, you're going to win most of your football games. So if we're going to win defense, then you got to win special teams. Last night we did not win special teams. We didn't win offense. We won defense. South Florida, you know, beat us offensively, and they beat us special teams. So our defense played well. You got to win two out of three, and I do think special teams. I don't think we're that far off. The punt stuff is correctable, because we do have two guys that can punt the ball. Young can punt the ball, and Verity can punt the ball. It ain't like, you know, we don't have a punter.
You have Pratt and Verity that can fix field goals.
Yes. So it's fixable problems, and the kickoff thing, you know, just start fair catching the damn thing. I would like to see us create something in the punt return game more than what we do. And we got plenty of speed on the team to do it.
Correct. And one question before we move on to our preview, our sneak peek of your ODU. We'll have our preview out, by the way, on Thursday for ODU. But I wanted to ask you guys your philosophy, and I'm putting you on the spot. Do you put your best players on special teams because it's so important, but you also put them at the risk of getting hurt? Or would you want to have some of the younger guys or guys that normally wouldn't get playing time, your up-and-coming guys, maybe your redshirt freshmen or sophomores that have a lot of talent, and have them do special teams? What do you think?
A mix. There's guys that definitely need to get on the football field because they are talented, but they're not ready to start at their position yet.
Right.
And you get them on the field. But also – you know, when it comes to kickoffs and punt returns, you need to have a guy back there with sure hands and speed, and it needs to be one of your best players. A mixture of young, talented guys that are going to be players for you in the future, and some veteran, experienced guys out there.
What do you think, Bubba?
Yeah, it's definitely like Kyle said. It needs to be a blend, and if you've ever heard an interview with Coach Dahl, and that's what he typically says, it's got to be, you know, obviously it's going to rely on the head coach's philosophy and what he permits you to do as a special teams coordinator. But it's generally, as a rule, it's going to be a blend. For instance, you might have a starter on one special teams unit as a starter, and then he'd be a backup on another couple special teams. Obviously on kickoff, it's a general rule you'd probably prefer to have have some backup linebackers or defensive backs that are getting some time but not currently starting, where you feel better about their tackling ability and so forth.
What about so we've talked about special teams and defense. What about, let's talk now. Earlier with you guys, we were talking earlier today, a preview of the preview, but let's call it a sneak peek of ODU. What do you think, where do we stand now? What are you guys seeing at first glance? We know the big upset, by the way, which was tremendous. Karma, Virginia Tech, I'm sorry. but anyway, it happens, and that's why you have to roll out the ball. And I would say to the folks at Virginia Tech, that's why we would go to Blacksburg if we could, just because you don't know what's going to happen. Not always the best team doesn't always win. So as far as talent goes, what do you see? I'm going to start off with Bubba this time, to put him on the spot. What do you see so far? A sneak peek with Old Dominion, and what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, when you take a look at ODU, obviously, on the whole, Bobby Wilder's done a tremendous job with that program. And when taking a look at things, they obviously had a very rough start to this season, starting 0-3,
right,
with losses, a 52-10 loss to Liberty, and then getting beat by FIU and also Charlotte. But so that's why yesterday, in previous seasons, it wouldn't have been as big of a surprise, but obviously a surprise nonetheless. But this year, it's even more surprising given the ODU start. But and their offense traditionally has been very explosive. But you take a look at this year, Stephen Williams, their true sophomore quarterback, who actually played his first game last year at Virginia Tech, a game in which they lost 38-0, at least his first start. So this year is actually a backup quarterback, according to what I heard on the telecast, third-string quarterback in Blake LaRussa, who came in and get this, guys. Not only was that Old Dominion's first ever win over a P5 program and first ever win over a top 25 team, and the Hokies were ranked 10th and 13th. That's what Blake LaRussa threw for the most yards that Virginia Tech had given up through the air since 1993, as he put up 495 and then four passing touchdowns and also ran for one.
What do you mean?
I believe he's a freshman. He's either a freshman or a sophomore, but I think he's a freshman. He's 30 of 49 for 495, and it was Old Dominion's most passing yards as an FBS program. And in addition to the tremendous game that he had, leading the Monarchs on four touchdown drives in as many possessions in the fourth quarter, you also had the tremendous performance of a real powerful running back in Jeremy Cox. Jeremy Cox had 20 carries for 130 yards, and, of course, the 40-yard or so touchdown run to put things away, making it 49-35 with around a minute or so to play.
Yeah, but what I want to know is I want to know more about what is his name again, above Blake LaRussa?
Blake LaRussa, as in Tony LaRussa.
Tony LaRussa, yeah.
Okay. I want to know more about this kid. I heard he was a walk-on. Is he a true freshman? Is he a redshirt freshman? Why the hell was he their third-string quarterback? Why did they put him in the game? I mean, I don't get it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Is Bobby Wilder a poor evaluator of talent? I mean, why was he their third-string quarterback? That makes no sense.
Right. I wasn't watching the beginning part of that ball game. So, based on the research I've done, I don't believe that Stephen Williams went down with an injury. I believe that Stephen Williams was pulled after the Monarchs' first possession, and from what I can see, I don't think it was injury related. That maybe Blake LaRussa has been showing good things in practice, and with Stephen Williams having struggled some up to this point, I think he was completing right at 50% or maybe slightly under 50% of his passes coming into yesterday. So I think it was them trying to jumpstart their offense more than him being forced into action. But
yeah, I watched.
As far as his class, I'm looking that up as we speak.
I watched them play Charlotte, and Stephen Williams, Dr. Death there, their quarterback. David got it. He sucked. I was like, that's their biggest problem is they don't have a quarterback to run that offense. And that's a passing-oriented offense, somewhat similar to what Lincoln ran here. If this kid is the real deal, it'll be interesting to see. If he is, that beating Virginia Tech still may be a bit of a fluky upset. But if that kid's a legitimate good quarterback, we may have our hands full Saturday. I don't know that we've played a really good quarterback, a really good passing quarterback yet this year.
Okay. A little bit more about Blake LaRussa. He's a 5'10", 185 junior. He's from Virginia Beach and Bishop Sullivan High School. He saw action in five games last year at Old Dominion. He started four at quarterback, and he was 3-1 in the games he started. He was 38 of 67 for 420 and three touchdowns, three picks. And then in 2016, he had played in 10 games as the backup quarterback. So this was a guy who had seen substantial action at quarterback at Old Dominion. And that, now he suddenly has the game of his life.
And now suddenly he's Brett Favre. That's insane. Let's hope my hunch is correct. And God, I don't know. I hope he's not listening. let's hope my hunch is correct and he can't duplicate it. That's my hunch. Could be wrong. You may come in and light us up. But it's interesting. You did say 2 years ago he was 3-1 as a starter, though his numbers weren't very impressive.
Yeah, I would say his numbers were respectable, but certainly not anything eye-popping. I mean, he was in three starts. He was completing a fair percentage of his passes, but he had only thrown for about not even 150 yards per game. And then he comes off the bench against a Bud Foster defense and throws for almost 500 yards.
We're not prepared for him, right?
They weren't prepared.
Makes you think, obviously, it was more in the running game as opposed to the passing game. But I remember a couple years ago, well, I guess 3 years ago now, when James Summers came off the bench when they had prepared for Blake Kemp.
I don't know. Maybe Buff Foster's defense is just can't adjust the quarterbacks they're not used to seeing. I don't know. That literally, most of the time you can figure out something, and maybe it's just a kid who knows the offense. He executed the offense, had the game of his life, obviously. Virginia kid wants to beat Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech, probably didn't take Old Dominion seriously. Old Dominion extremely fired up to have Virginia Tech in Norfolk. They
played really bad the first three games. They had three tough losses.
Yeah, and they wanted it more than Virginia Tech. And plus, just Virginia Tech may not be as good as people thought they were. They should have. I bet you if they played that game 10 times, ODU couldn't beat them again. That's no disrespect to Old Dominion, because how many times they're going to play that game? One time. But all that matters is Old Dominion beat them. I think it was a combination of things. As an extreme, in terms of point spreads, that really would go down, if you look at the spread, I believe it was 28.5, that would go down as one of the top 25 biggest upsets in college football history in terms of point spreads. I bet you if we looked it up, it would be.
Point spread up, I forgot.
28.5, I believe.
I knew it was well over 20. Okay.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to say, obviously, we're primarily focusing on ODU, but not to make this preview about the Hokies, but just since we're talking about the upset and the magnitude of it and that kind of thing, I did see this post game press conference quote by Justin Fuente, and said, "I told them I liked you guys a lot better when everybody told you you were terrible. When everybody told you you didn't have a chance in that first game, and all you did was work your tails off. And then now we get all feeling good about ourselves when we got brought back down to earth," Fuente said. "We got what we deserved."
Well, they on defense, it looked like they weren't giving much effort. God, I wish we could have played them this week. That would have been hysterical.
made a quote by Fuente regarding Virginia Tech's defense. It just said it became obvious they were going to throw it at every down. When they brought pressure, they completed – or when, I guess he meant to say when we brought pressure, they completed fade balls. And when we played coverage, they found holes in it. And he was really, really good, and they made plays in one-on-one situations. So we've talked about the improved performance of Corey Sargent, Hopefully Colby Gore will be back this week. Witherspoon's played well. Let's take a look at our defensive backs against some of those ODU wide receivers. And I had some numbers. I know earlier I mentioned the numbers of Blake LaRussa and then the running back. But as far as some of those wideouts to keep an eye on in this week's matchup, you have Travis Fulgham, who had 9 catches for 188 yards yesterday against the Hokies. And then you also have Duhart, who had 9 catches for 142 yards and 3 scores.
Yeah, we'll break that down more on the actual preview for ODU coming up on Thursday. But our secondary looks drastically improved, and what we got to do is get upfield and get pressure on that quarterback. And I saw somebody posted up on your banner earlier. We need to get off to a fast start, and I like this post a lot. You said that we need to go ahead and show Cinderella it's midnight.
Yeah, there's no glass slipper, right?
Exactly. We
doesn't fit.
Get off to a fast start. And look, we're by no means – believe me, ODU, I thought ODU would come in here fired up thinking they could beat us. And they will. They're going to have confidence now. But I think this plays – well, it may play to our advantage a little bit. They did this a week before they got here. Our guys are going to be fired up to play them. And you would think they're going to be a bit distracted all week because they're going to get – when they go to class Sunday morning, they're in Norfolk. Oh my God! I'm sure they celebrated big time last night. They're going to be told all week how great they are.
Right. That same quote that I just read for you guys from Justin Fuente. I'm sure Bobby Wilder is driving home that message to his football team, or he did yesterday afternoon or evening after that upset was completed. And that's probably one of the things he told him in the locker room and probably reiterated today.
Celebrated for 24 hours, right?
Well, he was reveling in the moment last night. If you watched his post-game press conference on CBS Sports Network right there on the field, he was in the moment enjoying it, as he should have been. It'd be another big win for him to beat us. Believe me, there's nothing that would make their fan base happier than to follow up a win over the Hokies by coming down to Greenville and beating the Pirates.
And the Pirates play this stuff too, anyway.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to this game a lot. This game is fun to me. We're playing much better. They're playing better. This game, it's been a while since I've looked forward to a home game this much. And you know what it feels like? It feels fun.
Yes. I was thinking that last night when I was watching the game, my mother-in-law was watching the game with me, and it was hilarious because she was like in other words, she was shocked that it was – she knew that – I told her that she knew South Florida was a good team, and she's like, in other words, the fact that we were in the game and it was a tight game, she's like, wow. I was like, I know. It feels weird for us to be – that tells you how far the program – it used to be
right.
That we were always every week in the game where you didn't have to – that would not be a wow factor.
Right.
The fact that it was such a tight game. Again, please, 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 for the offensive coaches, please don't abandon the running game. That's my one thing for – I'll talk about – you've got a successful running game, so don't – I don't want to hear – I'm going to do a Kyle for one quick second. I don't want to hear how we don't have – a running game. We fail in the running game. So when you get down one score, don't abandon the run. Please don't panic. If you panic, then everybody else panics.
Yeah.
That's mine.
Bubba, would you expect, and we don't want to get into a full idea from you here, but would you expect to see more Holton Ehlers this week? Because of my thought is, again, I think we're going to be able to run the ball on them.
Yeah, I think
and when I say more
we'll
Holton Ehlers, I don't mean more. I mean seeing him. Obviously, we're going to see more Holton Ehlers. I mean, literally, him taking as many, if not more, snaps than Reed this week.
If I had to bet on it at this point, I'd say that Reed will get more snaps. But I do think that you'll very possibly see the expanded package for him, maybe some more sprint out passes, play action, and as opposed to pretty much just a run game fix. But I think that's what we'll see this week with Holton.
That's gonna be fun. We'll have our preview out, by the way, folks, on for OD on Thursday. Bubba, what do we have coming up? I want to get a chance to promote what's coming up. It's been a long weekend, but a good weekend. But I know we all have things to do, so we're gonna wrap up this podcast in just a couple minutes. What do you think? Tell everybody what's coming up for this week for our podcast. We got a lot of good ones coming up.
Yeah, as always, we try to put our content out on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. So on Tuesday, we'll be bringing on a couple of ECU Olympic sports coaches, a couple of programs that are off to excellent starts. And Julie Torbett, over the last, I think this is at least her sixth, maybe seventh season or something now. But anyway, she was hired by Terry Holland.
In 2012, right?
I believe you're correct on that. But when she took over a 2 or 3 win program. And then this year, I know they were 7-3 the last I checked. I need to check to see how we did over the weekend. But then also you have Jason Hamilton, our first-year soccer coach, that took over for longtime coach Rob Donenworth. And Jason, Coach Hamilton, has us off to a 5-1-2 start prior to the weekend where we played out at Tulsa and at Memphis. So looking forward to talking to those two Pirate coaches. And then we'll also have an excellent, about a 15-minute sit-down with Scott Weatherby, former assistant AD with us, and then Mississippi State. Now he's the AD at Eastern Michigan. And on Thursday, we'll be talking to Patrick Johnson, who, of course, is back with 94.3 The Game. Excellent sports talk in the afternoons. Of course, he replaced Josh Graham when Josh left to go to Winston-Salem and WSJS.
Yeah, Bubba, is it true that Josh Graham is – are the rumors true? This Josh Graham kick rocks.
According to Hoist the Colors, apparently some of Pirate Nation feels that way, but I certainly have no issue with Josh. I enjoyed his programming when he was here, and he had on a lot of excellent guests. But in addition to Patrick Johnson, so we also will be talking with Eric Graham, former offensive lineman from the Skip Holtz era. Eric has done some work not only on 94.3 The Game, but he's gotten into coaching, since his playing days were over, and is coaching some semi-pro football. So he has that player's background and a coach's background when it comes to breaking things down. So we look forward to catching up with Eric. And then also we have a special guest, right, Dave, and a little behind-the-scenes look at how the ECU intro video came into existence.
Oh, we do. I tell you what, got to give a shout-out to Curtis Thiemann at Port City Films. He graduated in 2005, and on Thursday we got a great look on the end. He's going to give us a thumbnail sketch. He's promised me that he's going to tell us about – I'll tease this. He's going to tell us about the intro video and behind-the-scenes look at that and talk about him and his company. So it's going to be fantastic. And it just goes to show you guys, I will tease you with this, and you guys already know this. We know this ahead of time before we talk to him, that the previous administration did not want this idea, which is crazy, for the intro video for the football team, which is amazing. But that says a lot, doesn't it?
Well, they were idiots. The new intro video reminds me a lot of what we did in the Holland administration, animated, but this is obviously live action. Kicks it up a notch, a little modern twist on what we did, with the old stuff when we first got the video board, and with the old video board too, under the Holland administration, with,
right,
utilizing the pirate and the state logo in the skull and crossbones and looking, cool. Whereas, Shelly Vinegar and Jeffrey Comfer, you know, wanted to have some silly nonsense where players were hugging each other and singing whoa 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 and
yeah, that was a, yeah, back in 2013. That actually debuted against ODU.
That was the worst.
That's got to be the worst video we've ever had.
It was bad. And then the last couple of years have just been very generic. And it's kind of funny because Jeff Comfer, Shelly Vinegar are also very generic people. Anyway, that's enough bashing them. They're gone, thank God. Glad they turned Meador loose, and this gentleman and his company did a hell of a job with this intro video. Nothing but positive things to say about it. It's great. It fits East Carolina football.
And he wants to, and I will say this before we go. There might be some other companies that just kind of ho-hum. They just went through the motions with it. This is a guy that's a Pirate alum, again, 2005, who this was like a dream. Imagine that, a dream job for him, that he knows how important it is for these intro videos. It's not just like a company going, all right, we got some work, guys. We got the ECU Pirate football intro. And they're like, what? Who? Well, this guy knows about that. And he had a vision and a dream of, he knew what, he already knew what to do before he even got the gig. So that's what we need. I'll leave you guys with this. That's what we need at East Carolina, is first to hire an AD, somebody who wants to be here, not just padding their resume. We need to have a AD that, if it comes out that things don't work out with Montgomery, get a football coach that wants to be here, not just padding their resume. This guy, talking about Curtis Steeman, not trying to put him over. I can't wait to talk to him, but I know that he's already promised me we're going to talk behind the scenes, and he wanted to find out more about us, and he's now a fan of the podcast. So thank you, Curtis. Appreciate you, man, and I'm looking forward to talking to him on Thursday.
Yeah, and Dave, I have something to say as far as Curtis goes. Also a shout-out to fellow ECU alum John Medford. John is actually – he's an alum from back in the, I guess, early 2000s or so. That's what John, he was very instrumental in. I believe he may have actually been the one who helped start the Menjie's Maniacs.
Yeah.
So when we're getting ready for basketball season here in the coming weeks, we'll probably have John on at some point as well. But John was very helpful in putting me in touch with Curtis with Port City Films.
And I think we're also going to have one of my idols, Wink Martindale, on too. But I'm just kidding. That's a joke. That's for a station I work for. That's just a joke. Anyway, do you know who Wink Martindale is, guys?
He's a dude that winks at people. Wink Martindale, gay gymnast?
No, he's a game show host, a pre-Jeopardy.
Yes, I do. I know who that is. Okay, I know
who
you're talking about now. Okay,
anyway,
yeah, absolutely.
All right, before we get
to
that,
podcast gold
right
there.
Yeah, exactly. that's a great way to end the podcast. But Bubba, thank you. Thank you very much for your hard work. Kyle, thank you so much for your hard work, and appreciate you guys. And one of these games, we'll be able to watch it together, like away games, maybe. But anyway, in the meantime, good luck to the Pirates this week. We're going to have our podcast on Tuesday and Thursday as well. And, of course, our Pirate playback next Sunday. For Kyle from LaGrange Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.